Emergency Response Commission meeting of June 29th, 2021 to order. I have got a spiel to read. I would like to welcome everyone participating in today's meeting or listening online. This meeting is streaming live on SD.net, a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. For the benefit of our online listeners, I request that all participants please identify themselves when speaking during the meeting. Participants should also remember to unmute their microphones only when speaking. The meeting is also being recorded, and the audio will be made available online following the meeting. To find the audio recording online, do a web search for South Dakota Boards and Commissions portal, follow the link, and select the name of the board. So with that, let's do some introductions. So who do we have first at our sites?
Kim McIntosh.
Let's start with Dan.
Sorry. Kim McIntosh, Department of Ag and Natural Resources.
Kelsey Newling, Department of Ag and Natural Resources.
Chuck Kruger, DANR.
Pamela Hardy, Public Citizen, Nonprofit Organization, Hands of Hope.
Trish Kent, Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources.
Is that everyone there at DANR?
It is.
All right, let's go to the folks we have online. Becky, that looks like you online.
Yep, Becky Pence.
Justin, this is
Mr. Humphrey. Jason Humphrey, Department of Transportation. That have called in, any of our federal partners?
Hi, I'm Lee Bosteller, EPA.
Pardon?
That was Bree from EPA and Fran from CISA.
Mark Quick, EPA.
Dan Richard Spenza, Office of Hazmat Safety.
Canham. Canham.
Here.
Humphrey.
Here.
Leash.
Here.
McIntosh.
Here.
Merriman.
Here.
Pitts.
Here.
Kruger.
Here.
Lightholt.
I don't have her.
She didn't come in. Okay. And then Willett.
That was me. I'm here.
Okay.
Dustin. So did that complete the roll call? We have quorum?
Yes.
Outstanding. So I am going to ask to move things around on the agenda. We'll go ahead and approve the meeting minutes, and then for our agenda, I'm going to move up the vote while we have a quorum, at least, on some of our rosters. So hopefully everybody was able to get a copy of the March 30th meeting minutes and have had a chance to review those. If everyone's had a chance to review those, the chair will entertain a motion to approve.
Motion to approve, McIntosh.
Do I have a second?
Pitts, second.
Motion by McIntosh, second Pitts. Any further discussion on approving the minutes? Hearing none, roll call vote.
Canham?
Aye.
Humphrey?
Aye.
Leash?
Aye.
McIntosh?
Aye.
Merriman?
Aye.
Pitts?
Aye.
Krueger?
Aye.
And Willett?
Aye.
Okay.
All right, the minutes will stand as approved, and this is where I'm going to move item number 6, LAP roster review and appointments, up into the agenda before we do our federal updates. So, Kelsey, if you could lead us through that, please.
So at the last CERC meeting, the CERC had voted to approve 49 LEPC rosters, and we appointed people to serve on the remaining 7 counties. I provided 3 rosters for the CERC approval, and those were Edmonds, Hyde, and Kingsbury. So if we would need to vote to approve those. I also talked to the new county EM for Union County. He has only been there for 2 weeks, so he has not been able to get an LEPC active right now, and he could not tell that it had been active after their last EM. So he asked that we appoint an LEPC for them until they can become active again. So today I asked the CERC to approve the rosters for Edmonds, Hyde, and Kingsbury counties and appoint LEPC for Union County.
Kelsey, do you want that done in a motion, or do you want us to do it all in one?
I believe we can do it all in one, as there's no conflicting members that are part of these LEPCs.
Do any of the board members have an issue with approving the 3 rosters as submitted and the appointment of Union County as a single motion? If not, the chair will entertain a motion.
So I'll make a motion, McIntosh, to approve Edmonds, Hyde, Kingsbury as submitted, and Union County. We will submit the county commissioner and state's attorney.
It's the county commission, the state's attorney, the sheriff, and the emergency manager.
Thank you. That was Trish. Can't.
Yeah, sorry.
Second.
So I have a motion by McIntosh, second by Leash, and we caught the correct terminology in the appointments, correct?
That is the correct list.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call vote.
Canham?
Aye.
Humphrey?
Aye.
Leash?
Aye.
McIntosh?
Aye.
Merriman?
Aye.
Pitts? Pitts?
Aye.
Krueger?
Aye.
Willett?
Aye. All right, the motion passes. So those 3 counties, their rosters are accepted, and we will make the letter sent out to appoint the LAPC for Union County with those officials as identified in the motion. With that, we will move on to the rest of the agenda as scheduled. We'll start with our federal updates. Just in the order that I have here, Bree from EPA.
Yeah, let me get everything going here. Hello, everybody. Glad to see everyone again. A couple updates from EPA. First off, EPA is holding some listening sessions on the RMP regulations. And just kind of rattling off my notes here. In accordance with Executive Order 13990, which is titled Protecting protecting public health and the environment and restoring science to tackle the climate crisis. EPA is reviewing the RMP regulations and the revisions that have been completed since 2017. So this would include the 2017 RMP amendment rule and then the 2018 RMP reconsideration. Really, at this point, it's just presenting interested parties the opportunity to comment on these and if EPA needs to take a further look at those. So we've already had one listening session. There's a second one on July 8th. And besides the listening session itself, there's also opportunity to provide written comments. So I know I've forwarded on those links in the notes. If I need to forward those on again, certainly let me know, and I'll certainly be happy to do that. OSHA is actually participating in those listening sessions as well and receiving comments on the PSM standard if anyone is interested. So these sessions are four-hour marathons. So, you know, depending on if you want to sit through that, but if you have any interested parties that would be willing to do that, certainly let me know. One of the newest things is EPA recently posted the EPCRA for Officials video. It's about a 24-minute video that we put on. Apparently, EPA has a YouTube channel too, but we can find the link through the EPCRA main website. And really, the video is intended for state, tribal, local officials, emergency management leadership, and even new planners and new responders, basically, just to kind of give people an initial cut at what EPCRA is and kind of breaking down some of the different steps on that. So believe it or not, it's actually a pretty interesting video. So, you know, certainly if that's something for a lot of these LEPCs that are going up and trying to get up and running again, I think that'd be very valuable for them. I just saw that NASPO had posted one of their newest webinars, which is OEIA, America's Water Infrastructure Act, and the rules and regulations for TURCs, LEPCs, and CERCs. So I know we've had some discussions on those, but I think that'd be, kind of getting a national perspective, I think that would be a very interesting webinar that's going to be held on July 20th, and it's on the NASPO site. I know, the webinar itself is free, so you just have to register to get the links and stuff for anyone that's interested. There's a couple of trainings coming up. I have forwarded these on to some of our tribal partners, but in case if anyone has any questions or any interest, there's the SPCC and EPCRA for tribes. SPCC is more on the oil side of things, but, you know, just to kind of give any tribal nations kind of a high-level cut at what some of these different responsibilities and regulations are. So this is a basic overview. It's only 90 minutes, and there's another session in September 15th. So this has kind of been all done through headquarters, but certainly can forward on if you receive any questions. And then there's a SPCC for tribes, which is a more in-depth look at specifically SPCC issues, and that's a three-hour session, which is July 21st. And then there's a webinar for water systems that use chlorine, just complying with EPCRA and then 112R regulations, so which typically lends itself to the larger water systems that would use the larger chlorine facilities. So that is actually being held through our Region 5 office, but they've opened it up nationally, and that is being held on July 27th. So again, all of those things I can forward on any contact information if you're interested. And last and certainly not least, we're looking forward to working with Kelsey on the workshops. I know this year has been a little challenging, with all the COVID regulations and what we're kind of hamstrung with. We're finalizing our presentations. I will be sending out thumb drives to Kelsey next week. So, we will make sure and get all of that squared away. I know very far from ideal happened to participate remotely, but we will certainly do the best we can, and certainly look forward to 2022 being there in person. But I don't think people want a bunch of feds in place anyhow. So that's our gift to you. We're doing the best we can on that one, but certainly looking forward to working with everybody at the state. And unless Mark has anything to add, I think that's it from EPA.
Nothing to add. Okay, excellent. Kelsey, do you want to chime in on the workshops at this point since Bree, you finished with that?
I sure can. So like Bree said, we're doing our workshops this year. We will hold them the last week of July, and we will be in Sioux Falls, Aberdeen, Chamberlain, and Rapid City. We do have a few different locations this year, so we can actually accommodate for more participants. We'll have a total of 295 spots available, and currently we are at 132 registered with a month left of registration. As of right now, we've got a lot of state topics to try to help them fill in since the federal agencies can't travel with us right now. So we will have a waste management talk, our typical spills, tier two, TRI. We are still currently waiting on OSHA to see if we can get something from them as they are not able to travel either. And other than that, we look forward to hopefully having a good turnout this year.
Awesome. Thank you, Brittany, Mark, and Kelsey for filling in on some of that the workshop stuff. So we will see how that all plays out. Looking forward to it. Let's move over to Fran from CISA.
Well, hi, everybody. Again, good to see everyone again. And, you know, getting more and more normal at the CISA level. Still, just as APA, we have some travel restrictions as well in place. But we're getting there. That September date for us is the golden date where we can fly again and, you know, congregate, and the limits will be lifted off of our offices. So we're getting there slowly but surely. So what's new in our office? The first big thing for us, and Dustin, since I know you're so involved, this may be something that might make a difference to you. Jim Fagan left, and he moved back to headquarters. He accepted a position in IOD headquarters, and so we just flipped the switch back to having Scott Henning, who is the supervisory chemical security inspector, take the hat back on for the acting chief of chemical security. It should be transparent to you guys, Sky, myself, and Craig, as the office personnel, we made that big shift after the first Jim left. And, you know, we are not having any problems making the switch again. So, but just wanted you to be aware of that. You may see Jim in your travels back in headquarters, but it's Sky from the region for right now until they go through the hiring process again. Statistically, we are holding the same stats that we were last quarter. Within Region 8, we are at 99 regulated facilities. We generally hover around 100 facilities. And within South Dakota, it's still the 6 regulated facilities, 1 Tier 4 and 5 Tier 3. The big issue and big news for CFAS and CISA in general is the cyber attacks, right? I mean, it's just every single day. And this, you know, really impacts our chemical facilities. And when I say chemical facilities, you guys know I'm talking the broad scope of that, facilities that can be regulated by us, and obviously anything that falls under the FBA regulation as well. And the ransomware attacks, and Dustin, I know you're aware of this, they really are not just going after the big players. They're going after the low-hanging fruit. It's a business for them. And so, you know, the big one since our last meeting was the Colonial Pipeline, and that's, you know, obviously a big chemical sector concern for everyone, which really spawned some increased regulatory efforts. So many people may not know that TSA has always had that regulatory authority over the pipelines, but they've approached it from an advisory capacity. So all the tools that they have worked with the pipelines on up until this point have been optional, voluntary guidelines. Not so much anymore. So immediately following this ransomware attack, the 100 most critical pipelines in the country received a requirement to fulfill the regulations as written. And so I would anticipate, you know, Congress has been very adamant about closing some of these gaps and these vulnerabilities. I would not be surprised if we did not see more of that coming down the road, but it will fall in the CFAS bowl. It will fall into TSA, as they have always been the authority on that
particular part of our infrastructure. We did have some good news with that, aside from them getting back up and running and the operational controls not being impacted by that ransomware attack. The Department of Justice was able to recover about three quarters of the ransom that was paid. So, you know, it's good not just from, you know, having that money restored to its rightful owners, but also from the fact that we're trying to destroy their business model. We want to make it less profitable for them, or not profitable at all would be, you know, the preference, obviously. But so that was, you know, bad news, good news kind of story with Colonial Pipeline. Water and wastewater treatment facilities, you know, again, that's such a double whammy. Well, obviously, we're concerned about any ransomware attacks that could potentially damage these facilities and create an issue with the water quality as it is being released from the facilities and back to the recipients of that water source. But they also are not necessarily going after the big water treatment facilities. Like here in the state of Colorado, our biggest water provider is Denver Water. They serve 1.4 million people. They have not been attacked. However, we've had Roxboro Water, which serves 3,000 people, attacked, and they pulled offline for 3 months. So, you know, why did they go after them? Because it was easy. They got in through a back door. A lot of what we're seeing, like with Oldsmar and also San Francisco Water, which was a big dog in the fight, is that they've gotten in through the remote access. So oftentimes our critical infrastructure partners, the operational people on the end of the actual work, may not be as savvy about the requirements that need to be in place and the care that needs to be taken with cyber hygiene. And so the back door they got into was very easy passwords to crack from the remote access software that was there, and they got in and wreaked havoc. So in Roxboro, they were able to get back online, but they didn't pay the ransom. They rebuilt all of their information. They were doubly attacked. They were attacked not only on the operational side, but on the administrative side. So they weren't getting paid for 3 months from most of the customers, unless the customers were forward-leaning and asking, why haven't I gotten a bill? So a big lesson to be learned, you know, just because you're a rural state doesn't mean you're not in the crosshairs of these bad actors. And so just to be aware of that. Healthcare and biotechnology, every day there's another report. And, you know, obviously this is the last thing our poor healthcare partners need after enduring the COVID epidemic and the work that went behind that. But because they are so critical right now, that is why the crosshairs are on them. You know, and we're right there for them with our cybersecurity experts to assist, but just to be aware that our healthcare partners just need to take those extra precautions. Chemical facilities, we did have one up in Wyoming that was attacked, but, you know, there have been many more across the country. And the other big one here within Region 8 was the JBS meatpacking plant. Up in Greeley is their headquarters, but they're an international company that was attacked on May 30th. You know, they process 23% of all beef in the United States. So it's a big player to bring down. Fortunately, we were able to get them back up and running. They actually had hired a private consultant to do that, but we were there to assist with whatever they might need. And then lastly, on the cyber part, though not part of chemical, since this is something that you guys have there in South Dakota, casinos are the latest one on the crosshairs that have been popping up. And so, you know, particularly for our tribal partners, this could be a big deal. And so I've been mentioning it, even though it's a little bit out of the lane for those of our partners that have this as a part of their economic framework. And then just lastly, good news, the chemical security summit. So, you know, obviously we weren't able to plan for this to be in person because we couldn't even, you know, assure anything until September, and we have that long lag time to plan anything large in person like our normal normal chemical security summit generally brings 500 to 600 people, and so a long approval process for that. So we are virtual again this year. It's definitely going to be December 1st, 8th, and 15th, very similar to what we did last year, three Wednesdays in a row with a 4 to 4.5 hour block of time with multiple different presentations that anybody can register and sign up for. Last year we had 1,500 participants and lots of really positive feedback from it. We don't have the link up yet for registration, but I anticipate that's going to be coming shortly. And when I send Kelsey the notes from today, I will include the link to the summit webpage, because that is continually updated as we line up more and more of the different topics that we're going to be addressing at the summit. And with that, I will open it up for any questions that you might have. And thanks again for letting me speak.
Awesome. Thanks, Fran. Are there any questions from the assemblage for Fran?
Fran, this is Kim McIntosh. I have a question. So, like the water systems, and are you guys doing anything specifically as far as notifying any of those systems, or are you guys working directly with the state agencies to make that contact with those water and wastewater systems?
That's a great question. So, PSAs, the Protective Security Advisors, along with our Cybersecurity Advisors, the CSAs, have been proactive, and they've reached out when we find out about these attacks. They reach out to them and offer direct assistance. In some cases, like with the smaller facilities, they are saying, yes, please help. Some of them are going directly to the FBI, and we are partners with the FBI on this. And we would, you know, if we heard first, we get them involved as well, and vice versa. So the way it generally works is that we find out through reporting from the state to the PSA. That's been the usual route of that. And then once that happens, the PSA offers any kind of cyber assistance they might provide or our CSAs might provide to help them through the attack. And also from the criminal side, you know, we do want to pursue that, and that's why we want the FBI involved as well, so that, you know, they have some additional resources that we don't have right now. And the Colonial Pipeline example being that they were able to get some of the ransomware back is a really important thing that we want to offer. So in general, that is what has happened.
Debbie. Yep. Any other questions for Fran? And Kim, I'll say that Scott, our PSA for South Dakota, has certainly been involved in the emergency planning that's required from the Water Infrastructure Act, both in Sioux Falls and Rapid City. I've sat with him through the Rapid City process, and then as we go to smaller water producers, we'll be working through that same process. So I know Scott's on point as a South Dakota PSA with several of our water producers. And then I, not to speak out of turn, Fran, but I know that our CSA, our cybersecurity advisor, has been hired and is onboarding, but not necessarily deployed yet. So that will be forthcoming very soon, but there is a name in that box and that person is onboarding. So very, very soon, South Dakota will be able to leverage a cybersecurity advisor, CSA, as well.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, Dustin. We were super excited to see that big hole covered now. You know, I think the positive side, the flip side to all this cyber activity is that it woke up Congress and helped with the funding and onboarding of a lot of the resources that everybody desperately needs. This is such a difficult area for everyone to be able to tackle with such wide-ranging impacts on all of us. So, yeah.
Yep, and again, I'm just to emphasize that cyber. You know, I'm part of several Region 8 critical infrastructure groups, and the SLTTGCC, crazy long name, but the State Tribal Territorial Governing Council or Coordinating Council. I'm sorry. Cyber is always the headline these days. So I would say, Bree and Kelsey, if you're looking for space to fill in those workshops, if you're looking for topics, we may be able to get some SMEs or some subject matter experts to come in on the recent targeting of critical infrastructure by cyber actors. So just something to think about. Thank you very much, Fran. Moving on to Dan from PESMA.
Hi. PESMA's growing. That's kind of first thing on my mind is just to let people know our outreach program, which is I'm a part of, the community liaison, formerly known as Material Safety Assistance Team, our name recently changed, as well as we added a few more positions, as well as put some feelers out there for more outreach personnel. We have a new field outreach coordinator, which is a brand new position, basically facilitating concerns from stakeholders, from LAPC, CERCS, other people in the response community, other stakeholders, and really pool our resources to create more awareness of hazmat safety. We haven't yet started doing our in-person workshops, but we're really excited about getting back in the saddle again. It looks like probably next month we'll start doing that, but we haven't gotten a go-ahead from headquarters yet to start that, but we're always gauging interest. So if your organization is interested in having a hazmat safety workshop, we're more than willing to do that, covering all bases of 49 CFR. If you just want basic hazmat communication or placarding, marking, labeling, packaging, we also do our monthly webinars, which have those topics, shipping papers, anything related to shipping hazardous materials safely in transportation. It's a basic guide based for pretty much anybody. So whether you're a shipper or whether you're emergency response community, it's good information for everyone. We have been reaching out to the tribes within the central region and trying to get an idea of really you know, what kind of resources they need, what we can do to help. Been handing out some ERGs, but looks like everybody's doing pretty well as far as grants information, things of that nature. But if you know of anyone that could use a little bit of assistance when it comes to hazmat safety information or awareness training, we're more than willing to help out. So that being said, we also have been doing webinars related to lithium batteries and Superfund sites, reverse logistics, as well as cylinders is a hot topic, especially now with it being really difficult to find cylinders that are brand new because of the restrictions of material coming out of China. So there's a lot of people requalifying cylinders, or rather not requalifying them before filling them like they should. So we have been trying to amp up our outreach program to create more awareness on that topic. So really that's about it as far as the outreach side of PHMSA. But yeah, if you guys need anything or have any questions, feel free to reach out to me.
Hi, Dan. This is Bree from Region 8. Sorry to jump in, Dustin. I had a question, and I just want to make sure I was clear. So you discussed the new field outreach coordinator. Is that yourself, or is that someone else? And I'm assuming it's Region 8, not necessarily statewide.
It's for the whole outreach program for the nation. So, yeah, we're falling to Region 8. I do a lot of work with Region 7 as far as RRT and as well as Region 5. But it's a guy by the name of Mark Nichols, who is the director of Western Region. So you might be familiar with him. He's going to be located out of Atlanta, Georgia, but he's pretty much the go-to person as far as facilitating the needs of different stakeholders when it comes to hazmat safety outreach. So I can provide his information if you're interested.
Okay, yeah, that would be helpful. Just I know we have a kind of a working group for our region, so if there's interest there, I want to make sure there's kind of a nexus. If anyone has any questions, that they can speak directly to the source.
Okay. I think in the chat, I can just put his email.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Bree. Any other questions from Dan from PHMSA? All right, hearing none, that was EPA, CISA, and PHMSA. Do we have any other federal partners online? All right, well, thank you very much to all of our federal partners for attending this meeting and providing updates. I think the updates are valuable for us. Regarding the Colonial Pipeline and the GSA legislation, it's kind of par for the course in the hazmat world that we see regulations when we mess things up. So, the more we can be proactive and not have large incidents, the less federal regulation we tend to see. So that just seems to be a trend since Love Canal, and it looks like that trend continues. So moving on the agenda, I've got TRI report submittals. I'm going to assume that's you, Kelsey.
It sure is. So as a reminder, the TRI reports are an annual report from facilities that manufacture, import, process, or otherwise use any EPCRA Section 313 chemical in quantities greater than the established threshold in the course of a calendar year. The facilities are required to submit their report to the federal EPA and to the CERC. The reports summarize emissions, discharges, waste sent to landfills, material sent for recycling, and off-site treatment. So the TRI reporting deadline is July 1st. We've got 82 and counting reports right now. At this time, we should be getting a few more in, but the majority of them have already reported to us. Typically, we get about 100 reports each year. However, due to COVID, I'm not sure that all 100 facilities meet their facilities for total working hours for their employees. As one of the criteria for the working hours is that they need to have 20,000 annual employee hours. So with some places sending people home, I'm not sure that everyone will be required to report this year.
Obviously, and see what happens as we move back into more traditional operations over the next year. Any questions for Kelsey with the TRI report submittals? All right, hearing none, we've already handled agenda item 6. I did not hear in our roll call, do we have anyone from South Dakota HLS? John, were you able to make a call at all?
John is not on, but he did send me his report.
Please go ahead.
The Task Force 1 responded to no hazmat incidences since the last CERC meeting. They are retiring their Livefind AirSense search canine Cisco due to health issues. They've already been searching for a new puppy to take his place. They anticipate a relatively short time frame of training and certification to have a new search canine in place. The dog will be housed at the Rapid City Fire Department. Task Force 1 will once again be in the Black Hills during the Sturgis Rally. They will be at Fort Meade and conduct hazardous materials and technical rescue training exercises every day from August 9th to August 13th. The task force members will be available to respond in the event there is an incident requiring a hazardous materials or technical rescue response. All the members will be EMT, paramedics, and wildland firefighting certified in addition to their task force certifications. And lastly, the hazardous materials technician training trailer is currently in Watertown until tomorrow, and it will be in Aberdeen and be there through the months of July and August.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing, John. That model of having Task Force One out during the rally has worked well. It's great training for them, and again, it allows the shifting of some of those technical resources, EMT resources, and wildland fire resources out to the western side of the state during the rally should we need them. So that's been a good model. I'm glad we're continuing that. And Cisco, the rescue dog, really his working life's only been cut short by about a year. We're only anticipating him being around for another year as an active asset. But if anybody ever seen Cisco, that animal goes 110 miles an hour anywhere he was going. So we held a pretty big retirement party for him here at the Rapid City Fire Department, and the community turned out, and it was a big media event. So Cisco has served well. We're looking forward to the next one. But thank you, Kelsey, for sharing John's report. Rhett, I believe you are online from OEM for our HMEP report out.
Yes, good morning, everybody. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Can you hear me all right? Okay. Yeah, fine. As you said, I'm Rhett Howard with the HMEP program. It's actually been a pretty quiet quarter for HMEP. There have been no changes to the figures from the last meeting at HMEP 19. There have been only one request for reimbursements for the training in the current HMEP 20 year since we last met. That request came from Aberdeen Fire and Rescue for the amount of $4,950 for their spring live burn training. I believe that reimbursement check will go out to them sometime in July. Sioux Falls Fire and Rescue has decided to not attend the IAFC Hazmat Conference. Things that has been changed to a virtual format, but they had been approved through an activity request from PHMSA to add that grant money of $4,180 to their WRI Swiftwater Spill Response Grant, which was $12,760 and is now $16,940. Sioux Falls Fire and Rescue also informed me that the 40-hour hazmat pipeline emergency rescue tech training has been canceled, but through another activity request from PHMSA, we moved this grant money of $3,160 to the flammable liquid bulk storage specialist grant. It was $3,585, now it is $6,745. There have been a few inquiries about converting unused HMEP 19 grant monies to purchase PPE, but there have been no activity requests submitted to PHMSA for HMEP 19 or HMEP 20 for the PPE purchase this quarter. That's about all I have for the HMEP report. Stay cool and hydrated. This coming week's going to be a hot one. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Rhett. So with those, if memory serves, it's about a three-year performance period on those grants. So are you anticipating any crunch on the 19 allocation? Is that something that we need to send back out, or do you think we'll have applications?
We are trying to get the rest of that $27,000 spent. I have been in contact with all the sub-grantees on that, and we're just pushing them towards trying to get some PPE or some training to use these funds. So we are working on that.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Rhett? All right, hearing none, agenda number 9 is public comment period. Do we have any members of the public who have called in or are on site anywhere that have any comments?
I'd like to make a comment. Pamela Hardy from Hands of Hope. I am a liaison organization between church and church groups, pastors, ministerial leadership. I know we keep separate the state and church in a variety of types of organizations, but in this case, we've been traveling the state meeting with folks, and they are all in agreement, many of them in agreement, that a earthquake mitigation plan might be important at this time. I don't know how to state this differently. I'm going to be very transparent. There have been prayer groups that have been praying and through prayer have discerned that a fault line, the New Madrid fault line out of Missouri, is a situation that could affect South Dakota, as there is a fault line in Missouri. So anyway, we know that that would affect bridges.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you could share your name again so we can capture that in the minutes. I don't know that I was able to write it down fast enough.
Pamela Hardy, H-A-R-D-I-E.
Thank you, Pamela.
Thank you.
New Madrid is certainly something that is on most emergency managers' radar as a potential threat. That would obviously be a national, if not international, catastrophe should that fault violently rupture. Along with the Cascadia, in the Northwest. So those seismic concerns are certainly on the radar. We appreciate you bringing that forward. So thank you for the comment. Any other public comments? All right, not hearing any other public comments, we'll move on to item 10, other business. So any other business from the circuit this time?
Hey, Dustin, just want to call to your attention. I posted Jim Edmonds' contact information. He is your new CSA, and is probably a familiar face to you guys as he left the state of South Dakota as the Chief Information Security Officer. There you have it. And he is hooked up. He has a computer. You're feel free to go ahead and send him an email if you'd like.
Awesome. Thank you, Fran. And Mr. Edmonds has presented at multiple conferences, EM conferences, so hopefully most of us are familiar with Jim. Again, worked for a bit for a really long time, so lots of relationships already established. Looking forward to good things. Thanks for that, Fran. Any other business from CERC members?
Dustin,
all right, go ahead.
I was just going to say that our next meeting will be in September, and that will be our in-person meeting, and that will be in conjunction with the South Dakota EMA conference, and that will be on September 14th in Watertown, and I believe they have the meeting set time for 5:30, I believe. I'll have to check into that.
Yep, that's what I was going to bring up. Thank you, Steve. I believe that's correct. We'll confirm that time and date. We should have a room set aside. We should already be on the schedule, so hopefully that's all set. I very much look forward to anybody that's able to make the trip to Watertown. Looking forward to seeing everybody in September. So we'll confirm that information. Kelsey will get it sent out. And with that, I see no other business on the agenda. The chair will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn, Leash.
All right, motion to adjourn, Leash. I don't really think we need a second or a roll call vote to adjourn. So we'll call this meeting, the South Dakota State Emergency Response Commission, June 29th, 2021, adjourned. We'll see everybody in September. Thank you all. Have a great day.